is Data Blessing or Curse. Brought to you by Adastra, this is a must-listen podcast that inspires and advises people who are serious about digitalization.
Hello and welcome to this Adastra podcast. My name is Mark Cahoot and I lead the governance practice at Adastra, the global AI, data, and cloud systems integrator. We're coming to you today from Las Vegas at the occasion of AWS reInvent 2025. And my guest today is Glenn Remoreras, Chief Information Officer at Breakthrough Beverage Group. A strategic CIO and growth catalyst, Glenn has led global transformations across Asia, Europe, Mexico, the US, and Canada in industries from CPG to manufacturing. He's a Global Impact Awardee and a founding member of the BRM Institute, known for building high-performance teams and using data, AI, and modern cloud platforms to drive measurable business outcomes. At BBG, he's advancing a cloud-first, AI-enabled strategy in partnership with Adastra and AWS, with a strong emphasis on AI readiness, educating leaders, setting guardrails, and building the data and operating foundations to turn AI from hype into value. Glenn, thanks so much during this busy week for finding the time to chat, and welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thanks for having me, Mark.
Terrific
Appreciate
to have you.
Opportunity.
Yeah. Wonderful. To kick us off, for listeners who might have not heard yet about BBG, how would you describe the business and your role as CIO and what you're driving there?
Yeah, Breakthrough Beverage, we're a family-owned business and $10 billion revenue company. Mm-hmm. We operate in North America, 16 right. markets in the U.S. and in Canada.
Okay.
And it's been an amazing time since I joined Breakthrough over 9 months earlier this year. And, you know, the industry, I would say, is a bit challenged, driven by consumer changes in consumer behavior towards alcohol.
Right.
But I always like to see these things and challenges with a glass half full. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's, to me, it's more of an inflection point.
Yes.
Both for us in the industry to evolve and transform ourselves, but in the backdrop of AI, artificial intelligence technology, that's quite a game changer for everyone in every industry. So my role at Breakthrough right now is really to be the change catalyst and to starting with building the right technology foundation that will allow us to really scale our ambitions in terms of transforming our business. And distribution is always a game of efficiency and service. And that's where I believe technology and insights and AI could really make the difference. And it's been a great 9 months with the company. We're looking at challenges in a really positive way and with AI and tech, and it's the years ahead is both daunting but super exciting as well.
It's the only way to live, right?
Yeah. Yep.
I was interested in what you were talking about. Let's start with the consumer, right?
Okay.
Always, isn't that where we're laser focused,
yes,
right?
Yes.
To drive our strategies and our data strategies and our go-to-market strategies. I'd love to draw you out a little bit more about the beverage business and the market or operational pressures that have pushed BBG to transform itself.
Yeah.
You know, what business outcomes were you really sort of focused on? What were you prioritizing and how did they shape ultimately the technology strategy that you're putting into place?
Yeah. The pressure to Breakthrough Beverage is a pressure that every one of us in the industry are feeling. So we are kind of in the same boat. And this is something that, you know, quite frankly, we've never seen before. And and the good thing is that the industry in itself is really approaching this in a way that you know, you see the evolution already happening.
Right.
You know, you see alcohol, zero-based alcohol, and the flavor came a couple of years ago with seltzer, and now zero. And so you see that the shift of our thinking and building different brands and products that consumer, you know, based on the consumer flow. With that said, that also requires for us to be approaching the business in a different way.
Okay.
for the most part, you know, it's not just consumer behavior changing, it's consumer expectation.
Uh-huh.
Our customers' expectation in terms of efficiency and service, and you know, supply chain with our with our vertical.
So B2B as well as B2B, the B2C dimension.
Yeah. Yeah. The three-tier system in the U.S., the alcohol three-tier system in the U.S.
Okay.
If you're not familiar, we the manufacturers are, and owners of the brand are not able to sell direct to customers. So we are the conduit to the market. The expectation over that vertical in the efficiency and change and how we go to market is also shifting. And that's where I think the problem solving in terms of technology starts.
Right.
And to us, you know, the advantage that I have is like I came from manufacturing and brand building.
Yep.
With my years in Constellation Brands, the owners of Corona and Modelo, Mark Anthony with White Claw Hard Seltzer, and then going to distribution. But you can see it's night and day in terms of the business challenges. On one hand, you know, manufacturing and creation of brand, and the other hand is you really have to be efficient as a distribution business in terms of your process. To help, so that's key to finding. If I were to pick three things,
yes,
operational excellence is number one. It drives. There's a lot of P&L value there in terms of cost efficiency. Number two, customer excellence. The expectation of our customer is changing, and we got to be there with them with the things like what we do in e-commerce and other things. And lastly, how do we differentiate ourselves? And how we can continue to be nimble as the distributor of choice for our suppliers right there. So these are the key anchors of how we're looking at you know, how technology can help.
Sounds like the only constant is change there, and that the expectations are constantly evolving, both of distributors and consumers' preferences and tastes.
Yep.
Very interesting. Okay, so you've got a moving target that you're following when you're talking about when you're talking about even technology strategy. I mean,
yep.
The sounds of it.
Yep. Yep.
Let me talk a little bit now, or let's turn a little bit to the foundations you put into place and the partnerships. You recently migrated, if I'm not mistaken, over 300 on-prem services to AWS Cloud. How did the move and, you know, your Snowflake Data Governance Foundation help set the stage for AI? Maybe this is even a good time to talk a little bit about the architecture that you put into place.
Yeah, yeah. So our move to the cloud is probably one of my first no-regret moves when I joined Breakthrough February this year.
Yeah.
And it's not just about, you know, moving compute from our on-premise data centers today to the cloud, but what AWS really gives you is the toolbox that allows you to manage your data and eventually scale with artificial intelligence. And interesting, your question about how you architect it. You know, architecture is a word that you know, ways of thinking that. It got to evolve as well, how you approach it. The rigidity of the past or modularity of the past. Just because of AI, there's still quite a bit of the development that's happening between big techs, right?
Yeah.
Who's going to dominate the data layer and the AI layer, you know, the SAPs of the world and Salesforce and AWS.
Everyone's running for
Everyone is running for it.
How do you choose?
And how do you choose? Yeah. That's right. Yeah. So at Breakthrough, we have a concept that we call the AI flywheel. And the way I describe it to my team.
Constantly running by the sounds of it.
That's right. But the way I describe it to the team in a simplistic way is think about it as a cake, a three-layer cake, where the base is the platform. You know, AWS is part of that. Your ERP platform, your CRM platform, and your HRIS
core
enterprises that you know you converge and simplify. You know, the method of the past, right? Yep. In the middle of that cake is data.
Mm-hmm.
How do you combine the data across this different platform, and you know, have a quality data and have data that can be really you know, that you can be used for your business. And on top of that is AI.
Yep.
How you scale AI is really having good data. And that perspective allowed us to really define what the future looks like, even if the optionality of those tools in those layer cake are still largely developing nowadays, right?
Yeah.
But you know exactly what you want. You know that be able to, if you want to scale AI, you need to figure out data. And if you want to figure out data, you need to have the platform play with a simplified landscape. And hey, by the way, even the platforms are developing AI themselves. So there will be embedded AI within those platforms. So that in itself, I think, is an important component to this. The architecture component is very important for technologies nowadays. And the role of CIO still is that technologies, so that you have the right architecture foundation that not only, the words future-proof, but that can evolve, scale with the right optionalities. These things develop over time.
I think what's interesting there is, first of all, that you've taken a holistic approach, right? Kind of thing, that you're looking at sources, integration, and probably use cases, the AI use cases at the end to drive that. The second thing that I think is interesting in there is that you probably need to bake in a little bit of openness in your thinking, right? Given
absolutely.
That this is constantly in motion, still evolving, and maybe you're working with some technologies that are market ready, some that you think are maturing and stuff like that. So you're probably balancing, walking a tightrope between Skunkworks R&D kind of thing, but also robustness, in terms of...
It's what I call it. You got to figure out your principles, principle base. And because that governs your the options that when you're picking the options. But if you're within your principle, you know exactly, and then you can. There's a wiggle room within inside the principle. For example, even in the data space, the data platform space, there's quite a bit of optionality there. Even from AWS, SAP building their BDC platform, Salesforce in itself has their own data platform. Where do you go? Snowflake and everything else. You know, to me, what I tell my team is you got to suspend, you know, your disbelief and just, you know, probably sometimes even assume that all of these things will come to life in a good way. And it's a good thing because you do have options now, right?
Right.
But you started with an architecture principle that allows you for some level of optionality and flexibility over time with that, you know, AI flywheel and layer cake. Otherwise, it becomes just so muddy and it's harder to manage. And I'd like to believe that with AI in the future, the AI architecture we saw here in reInvent, the plugging and playing of this different elements hopefully will be easier over time. And the issue we always wrestle at CIOs, will be easier to navigate, right, in the future.
Absolutely. So I'm learning from you, Glenn, that it's not a set and forget kind of thing. It's not once and done.
Your
architecture, in fact, in the AI-driven world is quite dynamic. And if I could just drill in on one thing, ask you one more question about this, of your three layers.
Yeah.
Did anyone of the three cause you particular concern, headaches kind of thing, or did you need to spend extra time and emphasis on one of the areas than the other? Just curious.
I would say the middle layer, the data layer, that's where the emphasis is, and probably the most complicated as well, because quite frankly, because of expectation of, it's not just for me in breakthrough, but for many CIOs, that the expectation of scaling AI fast and scaling AI really, really well. Yes, the technology are there maturing, but data is really the key elements to making that happen. And I would say that the focus is really there to build the right data platform, to build the right organizational model and operating model with the business that allows you for not just building the right technology platform with the data, but the right organizational model with the hub and spoke. So that's where we're spending much of our time, and that's the bigger unlock, I would say, for the promise of the AI on top of the cake.
So for CIOs contemplating AI strategy, make sure you've got your foundations in place.
Yep.
Music to my ears, because I'm a governance guy, right? And you tee up the discussion nicely, because I think we're segueing to people. And if I can, despite automation, things like that, when I evangelize and talk a lot about the need for data governance, I often tell people that, you know, data governance, okay, sure, it's about data, but data governance is fundamentally about people,
yep,
not about data. And I think that AI, is another area that requires that kind of readiness as well, because we're going through anxieties, we're wading into the unknown, etc. So let's talk a little bit about AI readiness, data readiness, and education. When we talk about AI readiness, what does that mean in practice? What pillars do you think matter the most, kind of thing? Your operating model, your talent, is it change management? Is it the strategy itself? We talked about data quality and governance. What about also security and compliance? Yeah. Are these things that you've been thinking a lot about?
Yeah, all of those you mentioned. And in the earlier segment of our conversation, we focus a lot on the tech component of AI and enablement. Yeah. And yeah, it honestly, nothing works without people. And to me, with people, it got to start with education and literacy.
Right on.
Across the board, right? And there's one framework that I really like from Professor Ethan Mollick, I think Wharton Business School.
Mm-hmm.
I saw him when speak at a couple of weeks ago in Austin, and he's talking about this framework: leadership, lab, crowd. Leadership, lab, crowd.
Okay.
You start with leadership, educating the leaders about what's AI and what is AI, and what's not AI, and what's art of the possible. How does it's the other industries, other companies are doing it? It's really, really important that you start from the top, you start from the leaders, and the next one, the lab. The lab talks about experimenting.
Mm-hmm.
Now do you have leaders informed and knowledgeable about possible with AI? Invite them to experiment with you, and invite them, their teams, to be part of that experiment. And the next one is crowd. How do you bring everyone along, everyone in the company along the journey? And that's where at Vector, I'm really excited about partnering with our learning and developing team for next year. AI primer, what does it mean in different types of role? We're just barely scratching the surface and getting to that direction. Ultimately, you may have all the agentic AI figure out, but if process of people doesn't change, then it's really hard to see the line of sight to the value. So people, education, literacy, definitely one component and pillar to getting ready with AI. The other one, the first one is technology, the people, and the last one is process and governance. And mm-hmm. With AI, It is a fluid thing as well, the regulation, both internally from a policy perspective and externally from legal perspective, kind of how things is evolving over time. The most important thing is that you define a guardrail that is specific to your company's culture and values and risk profile, and you progressively iterate on that over time. And And you build that governance and process and production and compliance in a way that acceptable, and that also that stifle the innovation ambitions that you currently have. So those are the three things: tech readiness, people readiness from an education and literacy perspective, and third is compliance and governance, making sure that you're complying, and at the same time you're protecting the data and IP assets that you have as a company.
So you're giving our audience two rules of three, right? The components and the pillars of the overall solution,
yep,
if you will.
Yeah.
Your passion for the technology, but also going broader with that, probably. And the other thing that I'm taking away, I think that's quite a powerful model that you talked about, you know, the core, the concentric, I'm starting to see concentric orbits, right? A nucleus, the execs, the lab, and then the crowd kind of thing, right? So I think that for our audience is a useful mental construct when thinking about the overall model, the deployment model, the rollout model of AI. And I'd like to start by digging into a couple of these a little bit with that, perhaps that first nucleus or that first orbit, what have you. Maybe you're the nucleus, the first orbit being the executives. Yeah. And as I was talking to my colleagues in preparing for this, I learned that you started with education and with the executives, and you started with executive sessions and I think what we call an AI day to explore the art of the possible, to vision, right? What did that look like? Was it valuable? And how did that help start? You've got a C in your title with your other C's and your other executives. Did that start driving readiness? Did that change perspectives? Did that spark thinking in a way at the executive level?
You know, I was very new at Breakthrough when we did this May of this year with Amazon and Adastra and a couple of our technology partners alongside with us. And it started with a very simple conversation with my CEO at Breakthrough about, hey, in our next executive meeting in Tampa, why not have an hour dedicated on AI? And I started, bringing in my network, AWS and Adastra, and just brainstorm. What can we do? What cool things can we do to really surprise them and get them learning into AI? And one thing led to another, and it developed into a really robust agenda where, Salesforce on one hand, Adastra and AWS and even Snowflake came with quite a number of use cases that was really relevant to our industry.
Yeah.
And the opportunity to even do it in an Amazon fulfillment center in Tampa, where you can really see it work,
come alive
at scale. Yeah. So when I started brainstorming this with going back with my CEO, I said, "This is amazing, Glenn. Why not bring more leaders into the summit?" So we ended up bringing the direct reports of the executive team. So it's more like we have over 35 leaders at the Breakthrough that descended into Tampa and do this the AI summit. And it was a fluid thing that just came to life, and then we just went with the flow. And I remember opening the summit by saying, "We will be successful today by not necessarily, drumming up use cases and, but things that the to-dos. We can go out of this room if we are more knowledgeable of what AI is and it's not. That's a win."
Right.
And that's what I said, because, otherwise you tend to focus a lot on the action, and you really lose focus on what you're there for. Asking questions, be curious, learning, observing, and then that actuality of education is the one that will inspire you to ask the question, what can AI do to solve our problems?
It's changing the mindset.
It's changing the mindset. It's changing the focus of the day. And then that eventually became the catalyst for, a number of use cases that came from different departments, and a number of use cases that we were starting to develop, and we're developing into the partnership and funding from AWS and Adastra as well. So it became the trigger. So we started with leadership, and now we're in the lab experimenting, and the crowd we're happy to start next year with the broader population at Breakthrough.
I'm taking away from that, Glenn, really, that almost just to focus on use cases, important, right?
Yeah.
Art of the possible, but it's not, but it's almost like, the disease that all of us who work in technology and data have kind of thing is solutioning, right?
Yep.
When you're trying to come up with something, it almost sounds like, pre-baked use cases
yep.
are have the limitation that their role is actually to get you thinking more than just say, yep, okay, we want that, that.
But the good thing about educating them is that you are actually, you come out of the room also knowledgeable of the constraints that you have because of your starting point. So we know right there and then that we have a data layer to figure out, the data quality to figure out. So our use cases today are limited to, you know, things that may not pertain to enterprise data yet.
Right.
But that's something that we know that we can unlock in the future as we, you know, as we progress in that middle layer, the governance and data quality and piping the data of all our platforms. So it's also an expectation management and also it's sort of a road mapping exercise of where, you know, it's a timing element. You're learning it, but you don't want to, you know, necessarily wait for that to happen, the data to be figured out, to start doing the lab. You want to start doing it with where you can with your business partner, because hey, by the way, learning is a value impact driver too.
Indeed.
It's not just, you know, when you're, you know, automating a process or creating a revenue stream. It's learning an organization and getting ready with AI is in itself a value, a harvest for a company.
Maybe it's not for nothing that the event where we're together this week is called Reinvent.
Yep.
Indeed.
Yep.
I think you touched on constraints there a little bit, and I wonder if we could move there with my next question, maybe move out an orbit or maybe two as we're getting towards the crowd and out of the lab kind of thing, right, into productionization. And I'm curious how BBG, what kind of themes or guardrails resonated or were most important and salient when you thought about the responsibility and compliance dimension going forward, right? Deploying AI to business processes. What was on the mind of you and your colleagues at that point? Was it a consideration in terms of making sure that you're doing this in a scalable and reasonably, for lack of a better word, responsible, documented, holistic manner where risk is controlled?
Yep, definitely. And it comes necessarily with your partnership and who is in the table. In our case, even our legal team. Interestingly, one of our earliest pilot is a legal GPT.
Okay.
And it's just because we have, you know, we have accessible information of our legal information and it always in the confines of what is acceptable use of AI, that we are complying with the rules and regulations that are also developing, and our internal AI policy that we have progressively evolved over time. HR is also an important player here, and quite frankly, even our chief HR officer director is one of those that really pushing the envelope on in terms of expectations and AI in the future. So, and it starts with our goal is it starts with the learning development for next year, and hopefully that can catapult that for bigger things. So, maybe the guardrail question will continue to evolve over time as we scale the different purposeful use of AI within Breakthrough, as other companies are. But we're approaching it, you know, one step at a time.
Understood. So
like many companies, a couple of years ago when ChatGPT came on board, the first thing that we did is like, what are the most basic acceptable use cases we can go out there just to protect ourselves? And then it evolves. Like now that we know, we've been dealing with this for a year and a half, what's the next level of safety and protection? So that's kind of the mentality that we have. It's an iterative approach, and staying close with legal, staying close with the regulation to make sure that we are, we're close to
taking it. On more risk as you go and as you're capable of handling it. So a risk-based approach. Yeah. And the other thing that I just wanted to, that I took out of there from what you were saying is acceptable uses.
Yeah, acceptable use.
And I often find that is a great starting point with AI governance, right? It's setting clear expectations, thou shalt not. This introduces risk and you're accountable for that. And this does not, you may go down that path. So I think that I hear that from a great number of clients as a good starting point. But very interesting that you've taken a risk-driven lens on your use case selection.
Yeah.
Let's stay with that for a second, strategy and use case selection, prioritization. I'm curious what factors come into your thinking. We've talked about data readiness, right, kind of thing. We have the data quality that'll let me run the models and things like that. We've talked about risk. I'm curious what else you consider when thinking about, okay, the year ahead, which ones are we going to do?
Yeah, kind of, you mentioned constraint, and I think the other word there is feasibility, viability. You may have, you may know of a use case that probably the most impacting use case that you can drive, but it may not be viable, feasible at the time because of where you are in the journey of building what I said is the data
yes.
element. So that in itself is an important component of the factors of that you have to put in, because you don't want to force yourself to do a use case that, you know, that if you do it at some point in the future, in the near future, you can do it in a way that scales, in a way that it's easier for you because of what the tool set that you already have that has matured over time.
So there's a multiplier effect in there, kind
that's
of
right,
thing.
That's right. The other one is the business impact.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, that each the things that you do has a business impact, and I would say, and I will repeat it, that each learning is part of the business impact, and you know, efficiency and other things. I think those are primarily the two things really that we're looking at to make sure that, you know, that we look at it in a quadrant. We will approach things that are that can be done now, that has, you know, the value, that impact, and those that we cannot do now because of the limitations that we have, that we know that we can do in the future, it'll be part of the roadmap. You'll see it, that it's where the rubber meets the road in terms of roadmap, is that you see it over time and there's a plan for it, right? And it's coming when the time is right.
Right on. What I find fascinating about this is we start with something like, you know, operational efficiencies. That's our goal, kind of thing. But in discussions, it seems like I think people don't realize how profound the change is in terms of culture, in terms of the overall way of thinking. The dimension of learning that you've been talking about a great deal. So it sounds that the CIO's role here is very much as change agent in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Change agent, educator. You know, this is a catalyst of you know, bringing in new thinking. But I'd like to say too, with the thing about artificial intelligence, I don't confine myself just within the walls of what I do as CIO to breakthrough. It's got to be beyond, because I have kids. I have 14-year-old twins, and
their future.
I don't know if the word's worry. I worry about the world that they're going into,
absolutely,
right? When they go to eventually to the university and after, right? The blessing that I have are they're both pretty techies in their own right. So part of a robotics team at the high school program, they code. But even then, coding is changing too, to vibe coding. So to me, is the crowd, leadership lab crowd extends to community, extend to bringing people along that you know to be ready for the world that we're going into in many ways. Like I already know that on Saturday going home, I'm going to watch the keynote yesterday with my twins.
Must make for interesting dinner table conversations.
Definitely. Yeah. You know, it may, you know, some areas of the talk might be too business focused for them. They may get quite a bit of the techie, but that's fine. That in itself is showing the way that the world that you're getting into, you got to be fluid over. You got to be fluid about it as well. You got to be open about it as well.
Curious.
Be curious about it, and because when it's your time, you want the people that are close to you to be ready. And I think as leaders in our community, we have that responsibility.
Yes.
To bring people along, our family, our community, the folks that we help outside, we mentor. That yeah, this AI thing is a good thing, but we got to be ready for it, you know, in more ways than one. Yeah.
Doing these podcasts, Glenn, what's been astounding me is it's an investigation of all the implications of AI. We talk about, you know, workforce redeployment, workforce displacement, and things like that. But these are very profound implications
yep.
on organizational yep. life, culture,
yep.
and you've just added another dimension to this. And it's to what extent AI-driven transformation, business transformation, can actually help companies be good citizens,
absolutely.
Good neighbors,
yeah.
good community members,
and solve the real problems that we have,
yeah.
like cure for cancer,
yep.
solve climate change.
Yep.
We will have an excellent partner in artificial intelligence to the years to come to solve those bigger problems. And ultimately, humanity always figure things out. We move from one problem to the other. And if you have a much better tool that comes of age, then we move to the next one. It's all, we always find a way. But we have to prepare the next generation to be able to make that happen. You know, otherwise, you know, it's going to be limiting for them. And it starts with the people close to you.
You use the word blessing. I'll say I consider it a privilege to be able to see this, be part of this sort of epochal change
yeah.
kind of thing at early days yet kind of thing.
We're in early days, yeah.
May you live in interesting times.
Yeah, definitely. But, you know, this is not, you know, we have been through this several times, you know, when humanity discovered fire, discovered electricity, industrial revolution, internet, even smartphone and social media, but those cycles of innovation, we had time. You know, we had hundreds of years in industrial revolution to figure things out.
Now we have nanoseconds.
No, we don't. Like, you got to be in conference. Like, I'm in conferences very more often
yeah.
like than in the past, because every month, things are different. Things are changing. You got to be, you know, you in lockstep with those changes. And yeah, but you know, I'm staying positive. I'm staying ready, and I'm bringing my kids along. I'm bringing my family and community and crowd along for the ride.
You're embracing change at a multi-generational level.
Absolutely.
One thing.
We got it. We got to think about it that way.
Stakeholders. Just coming back for a second to BBG itself, I'm curious, because we're talking so much about the change dimensions. I'm curious if you've set up any within the organization, kind of an org structure, operating yeah. model, if you've set up any new, you know, structures, whether centers of excellence and enablement, innovation, you talked about the lab yeah. and stuff like that. How have you organized this? Is it you and a few people, or is it,
yeah.
How does that look at BBG?
So, you know, we started like probably many others. We started scrappy. We just scrap our way out of this, you know, use cases and pulling our partners together and making it happen. And you got to, you know, you don't want to wait until you're 100% prepared to execute this kind of things, because you're missing on the learning piece. We just hired, very exciting, new VP of data and AI, Elton Martins,
mm-hmm.
who used to be with the NFL. And he's leading facilitating this transformation for us from a data and AI perspective. And part of the plan next year is to really solidify that AI center of excellence
right.
idea that will eventually, you know, be that the way of working that we want to do with our business areas over time. So from scrappy to a center of excellence. And we're working with, you know, we're working with Adastra, we're working with AWS as to what are the best practices, and make it, and we'll make it, you know, breakthrough. You know, we'll eventually implement it in a breakthrough way earlier next year. So we are in the process of formalizing this component. But in my view as well, based on what we're seeing here at reInvent, that partnership model that I'm expecting with Adastras of the world, building that AI, team stack, to me has to involve both our teams from Breakthrough and both our partners team.
Like absolutely, an extended team.
Yeah, but partners. We also need to start really challenging ourselves in doing it the way of the future, which is the elements of vibe coding is there. You see the Kiro that I've seen the demo and it's quite amazing what you can do now with vibe coding, so I was just talking to Shamir yesterday over dinner, and it's not about it's about really multiplying effect to how much you can do and how many use cases you can deliver because of this tool. So it's not about if you build the right AI team and you have the right center of excellence and guardrails and governance with the right use of the newer tech like vibe coding, you have the opportunity to scale and the opportunity to make it. In the past you can do one use case, let's think about 10x because of this new approaches that are coming.
Yeah.
So that's really where I'm super excited about getting there at some point next year.
I think you're bringing in some very interesting thought leadership, because we had Elton on this podcast a few weeks ago, and what he told our audience about was the importance of data observability back into preparations, right? Because there's no better career ending move than trying to train models on data that is not fit for purpose, right?
Kind of thing.
So catching data quality issues at the outset before you're integrating the data, moving that up to the left, if you will, in the process kind of thing. So that gives me great confidence that your team, in fact, will be using the latest AI adapted governance approaches kind of thing. I'm just wondering, to bring all this to life, would you care to share a few project examples? The initial project, we talked about your legal use case, a few project examples in terms of use cases that you've brought to life.
So legal use case is one of them, definitely. We're also developing an AI sales coach model with the help of AWS and Adastra. And with the AI use, with the sales coach use case, it becomes feasible for us because we do have a lot of knowledge base in terms of, we call it the sell sheets, right? The products that we have and how you sell them, so you combine them into a model and develop them over time with our sales team. That in our opinion, with proper use and a scaled use, will continue to develop over time.
I see.
So that's the other one that we're thinking. We have a pipeline of many use cases that we are looking at to do next year, along the journey of our data preparedness and readiness, and that's something that with the center of excellence that we talk about, with hopefully a team jointly with our partners, we can start really accelerating the creation and productization of those use cases.
Terrific. Glenn, we're almost out of time, but if I were to ask you for one bit of advice for your peers, for fellow CIOs, imagine people who are fast followers, who've been waiting on the sidelines, who've been watching, but are now ready to catch the train, right? And want to jump in and get going quickly with AI, deploying it to business. What advice would you give a CIO who wants to get AI ready quickly, and to get them passionate, inspired, and focused on getting going?
Yeah, I think it starts with the, I would say, with yourself as a CIO, and really reflect on what role are you going to play in this phase of transformation. Whether you like it or not, it's coming. And the demands for it, even if the demand is not yet existing, coming from the top, from your leaders, you got to start thinking about AI as if it's already here. And, you know, preparing yourself, thinking about what you already have. Number two, preparing your team and what role they play in terms of making it happen for your organization. And number three, preparing your capabilities so that, you know, when you're ready to scale, you can do it. And having the right partners. I always say our job as CIO, it's both a blessing and a curse. You know, the blessing is that we have a role that really cuts through end to end. You know, our peers, you tend to have verticals. Like you see supply chain, you see finance, but as a technology leader, we see things
cutting across
end to end, and you don't have a choice but to do that to see it, because you're enabling all those functions and all those business and multi businesses. The curse is that the expectation that comes from all of those verticals is so tremendous.
Massive, yeah.
And double it with what you know, with AI and what they're hearing about AI. So my advice is define your role. Are you gonna be the catalyst of change? Are you gonna be the educator in chief in the company? Are you gonna be the transformer? Are you gonna be the tech landscape builder to make it happen? Or you want to be all of those, because quite frankly, you need all of those. So it's an interesting time, but at the same time, it's a great time to be a tech leader, where you can perform roles in white spaces. And that's why I'm super excited about what's to come and the role that we play in businesses and industries and communities. Over this age of AI.
The transformative role of the CIO
in the time
of AI.
Yes, yes.
Glenn, you've shared your passion and excitement with us and with our audience today. We're out of time, but thank you very much for taking time out of reInvent to speak with us about building AI readiness and education and really making this come alive as someone who is walking that talk as the CIO driver, the AI driving CIO. So thank you very much for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Mark, and I appreciate the partnership with you and Adastra.
As do we.
And over the years.
It's been a great chat. And to our audience today, thank you for being with us. And if your team wants a low-risk first step in your AI business transformation journey, reach out to Adastra and let's make it happen together. And as always, if you've found this podcast useful, you know what to do. Like and subscribe. So long for now from Las Vegas.